Emma Hamilton's life reads like a novel too fantastical to be true. Born in poverty, she transformed herself into Europe's most celebrated beauty, diplomatic power broker, and eventually the mistress of England's greatest naval hero. Her meteoric rise from coal miner's daughter to international celebrity captured the Georgian era, inspiring countless artists, writers, and fashion trends. Even today, her influence resonates. Kate Moss cited Emma's portraits as inspiration for her controversial 2006 Vanity Fair photo shoot, while Emma's Attitudes performances pioneered the tableau vivant art form that influenced everything from modern dance to fashion photography. When Nelson's flagship HMS Victory was restored in 2005, visitors were shocked to discover Emma's initials carved into Nelson's cabin wall, a testament to a passion that changed the course of European history. Emma Hamilton, born Amy Lyon on April 26, 1765, emerged from challenging beginnings in the mining village of Ness on the Wirral Peninsula. Following the untimely death of her father Henry, a blacksmith, her mother Mary relocated them to Hawarden. Their living conditions were austere, a basic two-room dwelling with minimal amenities, where daily life centered around essential household tasks and basic sustenance. Despite these circumstances, Emma developed into a remarkable young woman. Unlike many children affected by the harsh conditions of the era, she grew up healthy and vibrant, possessing what contemporaries described as exceptional vitality and presence. Her mother ensured she received basic education, an unusual advantage for a girl of her social standing. Young Emma showed an early fascination with the finer aspects of society, often observing the elegant carriages passing by Broad Lane Hall rather than engaging in typical village work. At age 12, Emma began domestic service with the Thomas family. The position involved demanding household duties, from maintaining fires to general cleaning and maintenance. Finding this situation unsuitable, she soon sought other opportunities. Driven by ambition, Emma made the bold decision to journey to London, joining many young women seeking better prospects in the capital. Her journey was challenging, traveling in modest conditions for 180 miles through difficult weather and rough roads, while more fortunate travelers passed in comfortable carriages. In London, Emma's early employment included domestic service before securing work at the prestigious Drury Lane Theatre as assistant to the wardrobe mistress. The theatre, London's premier entertainment venue, hosted thousands nightly. However, this position proved temporary, and she later found herself working in various establishments near Drury Lane. A significant turning point came in 1778, when James Graham, an innovative medical entrepreneur, recruited the 16-year-old Emma to perform at his Temple of Health in London's fashionable Adelphi district. This elaborate establishment featured educational presentations on health and wellness, complete with theatrical elements, including special effects and music. Emma's natural grace and presence made her well-suited for these sophisticated demonstrations. Her social connections expanded, and by spring, Emma had secured a position at an exclusive establishment on Arlington Street near Piccadilly, managed by Madame Kelly. The venue, known euphemistically as Santa Carlotta's, catered to London's elite society. Emma, now 14, was particularly valued for her artistic talents, with society publications noting the arrival of Miss Lyon. At 15, she received an invitation to spend a summer at Uppark, Sir Harry Featherstonhaugh's elegant Queen Anne country estate on the South Downs, where she performed as an entertainer, hoping to establish herself in refined society. Emma's pregnancy, conceived in summer 1781 with Sir Harry, complicated her already precarious position. When she confessed her condition in its third month, Sir Harry erupted in fury, accusing her of infidelity and abandoning her. Nearly destitute after selling her trinkets and dresses, the 16-year-old traveled to Chester while corresponding with Charles Greville, who was considering taking her as his mistress. Greville established Emma in a small house in rural Paddington Green, controlling every aspect of her life. He required her to dress plainly, maintain perfect household order, and avoid pleasure gardens or concerts. Emma spent her days in domestic tasks, improving her reading and practicing singing and guitar to entertain him during his visits. She kept meticulous household accounts, read improving literature, and entertained Greville's cultured friends who seemed interested in her opinions as well as her beauty. While Greville wanted the real Emma docile and controlled, he had ambitious plans to profit from images of her beauty. He arranged for her to model for George Romney, launching her transformation into London's greatest female celebrity. Romney had perfected his artistic approach, but still sought the ideal model to embody his classical vision. Emma proved perfect. Her dance training and experience as Graham's goddess gave her exceptional posing abilities. She transformed herself between characters while maintaining her essential beauty, becoming not just Romney's model, but his inspirer. Romney produced about 60 finished portraits of Emma, plus hundreds of sketches. Works like Circe showed her challenging the viewer directly, while The Spinstress playfully satirized Greville's attempts to domesticate his sensual mistress. Emma became the studio's star attraction, with visitors hoping to glimpse her. Her portraits sold quickly, and engravings of her flowing, uncorseted style influenced fashion across England, helping shift women away from rigid brocades toward more natural silhouettes. By 1783, Emma had become London's most sought-after model, her image appearing on consumer goods from cups to clothing, making her both a male fantasy and female fashion icon. Her fame grew through Romney's portraits, just as Sir William Hamilton, Britain's envoy to Naples and Greville's wealthy uncle, arrived in London in 1784. Greville, facing financial difficulties, saw an opportunity in his uncle's visit and arranged for Emma to entertain him. Hamilton was immediately captivated by her beauty and charm. Though initially uncomfortable with his attention, Emma gradually warmed to his kindness. Meanwhile, Greville was secretly formulating a plan to solve his financial problems by transferring Emma to his uncle's care, a scheme that would betray both his mistress and his benefactor. By early 1785, Greville had devised a plan to send Emma to Sir William as his mistress, telling Emma he needed to travel to Scotland on business and suggesting she holiday with Sir William for 6 months. Emma arrived in Naples on her 21st birthday, greeted by the bright sky, Vesuvius's red sparks, and twinkling bay. When Sir William revealed Greville had no intention of retrieving her, Emma was devastated. Sir William, realizing Greville had deceived them both, temporarily eased his romantic pursuit while showing Emma his beloved city. Naples was Europe's third largest city after London and Paris, housing nearly 400,000 residents. It functioned as an 18th-century Las Vegas, a place of glamour and extravagance where buildings were painted in bright garnet, sapphire, pink, and mint green. The English were particularly enthusiastic participants in Naples' hedonistic culture, flooding the city as tourists obsessed with shopping for antiquities and souvenirs from Herculaneum and Pompeii. By Christmas, Emma had fallen deeply in love with Sir William, who had comforted her through her heartbreak over Greville. Their relationship quickly deepened, with Emma writing passionate letters when they were apart. She structured her days to improve herself, taking singing and Italian lessons, sitting for portraits, and proving her worthwhile occupation to Sir William. In July 1787, Sir William gathered distinguished guests at his palazzo for an unprecedented entertainment. After dinner and fine wines, they were led to dimly lit reception rooms, where Emma appeared draped in white with flowing hair. Using only simple shawls, she transformed herself through a series of classical poses, becoming weeping Naomi, dagger-wielding Medea, and seductive Cleopatra. The mesmerized audience begged to see more, but Sir William informed them there was already a waiting list for Emma's attitudes. Emma had developed these performances since arriving in Naples, combining her dance training, modeling experience, classical influences from Sir William's collection, and local peasant costumes. What particularly impressed audiences was her facial expressiveness, showing emotions with subtlety rarely seen in theatrical performances of the time. Through these performances, Emma cleverly redirected attention from her notorious past to her artistic talents. By 1788, after just 2 years with Sir William, Emma was determined to become Lady Hamilton rather than remain his mistress. She constantly emphasized her gratitude and devotion, suggesting she would make an excellent wife, while strategically encouraging rumors they were already married. On September 6, 1791, Emma married Sir William in a small, secretive ceremony at St. Marybone Church. She wore white muslin with a turquoise sash and a blue plumed hat. Back in Naples as Lady Hamilton, Emma excelled as hostess during elaborate four-hour dinners, monitoring servants, maintaining conversation, and entertaining guests afterward with songs, attitudes, or the tarantella. Her next conquest was Queen Maria Carolina, the most influential queen in Europe. Unlike her lascivious husband Ferdinand, Maria Carolina was a sharp political operator who had assumed power after joining the Neapolitan State Council in 1777. By late 1792, Emma had become the queen's special favorite, with Maria Carolina signing letters as Charlotte, a privilege reserved for siblings and closest friends. Their relationship was political, yet intimate, as they shed tears over Marie Antoinette, Maria Carolina's sister who would soon face the guillotine, and plotted to advance British-Neapolitan relations. Emma's defining moment arrived on July 19, 1798, during the official reception for Rear Admiral Horatio Nelson in Naples. As his fleet made port, Emma Hamilton, age 33, graciously received the distinguished admiral, offering support as he disembarked, while the royal delegation and her husband, Sir William Hamilton, observed from a distance. This diplomatic gesture marked the beginning of their significant alliance and her rise to historical prominence. Nelson had undergone considerable changes since their previous meeting in 1793. Combat injuries had affected his right eye during the Battle of Calvi in 1795, and in 1797, he lost his right arm in battle. Despite these challenges, Nelson had emerged as England's preeminent naval commander following his decisive victories at Cape St. Vincent and the Battle of the Nile. Emma orchestrated an elaborate celebration for Nelson's 40th birthday, hosting nearly 2,000 guests in a magnificently decorated palazzo. The courtyard featured artistic floral displays, elegant illumination, and a commemorative column bearing the inscription Veni, Vidi, Vici. Their strong connection was evident throughout the evening, though Sir William remained untroubled, viewing it as diplomatic courtesy. When French forces advanced on Naples after defeating Ferdinand's army, the court prepared for evacuation to Sicily. Emma coordinated the complex logistics while civil unrest erupted in the city. Acting as the Queen's trusted intermediary, she facilitated the secure transfer of royal assets to Nelson's vessels over several precarious nights. The evacuation proved challenging, with overcrowded ships facing severe weather while Emma attended to the distressed passengers tirelessly. In Sicily, Emma balanced multiple roles, supporting the grieving queen following Prince Albert's passing, managing royal household affairs, and assisting displaced British citizens. Her partnership with Nelson deepened in early 1799. They became inseparable companions, sharing both professional and personal bonds. Emma continued her celebrated artistic performances, entertaining diplomatic guests. By late 1799, their partnership attracted significant attention in the English press, drawing historical parallels to classical figures. Emma, concerned about maintaining their connection during Nelson's duties in England, made personal decisions that would further entwine their lives. Their relationship reached a new phase in February, resulting in expectations of a child, despite Emma's advanced maternal age of 35. The whole of East Anglia gathered at Yarmouth to welcome Nelson and his entourage when they returned to England. Boats flying colorful flags met them at sea, and excited crowds lined the shore. When they landed, men unhitched the horses from Nelson's carriage and pulled it themselves to the inn, where Nelson and Emma waved from the balcony as infantry played a congratulatory march. Nelson formally separated from his wife Fanny, choosing Emma and leaving that night for Plymouth without ever seeing Fanny again. On January 28, 1801, Emma gave birth to a daughter. Though Nelson had hoped for a boy, he was overjoyed at having his first dear pledge of love at age 43. Against convention, Emma named the child Horatia, an unmistakable declaration of Nelson's paternity. Nelson's jealousy over the Prince of Wales's interest in Emma reached fever pitch. The prince, separated from his wife and tired of Mrs. Fitzherbert, saw Emma as exactly his type, strong-minded, stylish, and adored by the public. Nelson was devastated, writing frantically, "Oh God, why do I live? I am mad, almost dead. God strike him blind if he looks at you." Emma transformed Merton, their country estate, into both a rustic fantasy and shrine to Nelson. She renamed the ditch the Nile, built an Italian bridge, and populated the grounds with animals while planning elaborate gardens. Inside, Emma created a temple to Nelson. Kitsch mirrors, gold trimmings, and Nelson memorabilia covered every surface. Giant A's festooned walls, windows, crockery, and ornaments. After Nelson's death at the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805, Emma received his personal effects from Captain Hardy, his hair, lockets, rings, and her pictures. She pieced together the battle's events from newspapers and visitors' accounts. Nelson had been struck by a musket ball in his spine while standing prominently on deck. As he lay dying in the ship's makeshift hospital, he begged Hardy to "take care of my dear Lady Hamilton," and his last thoughts were of her. When Nelson's will was read, Emma received Merton with its furnishings and £500 annually from the Bronte estate, far less than she had when Nelson was alive. Though the public associated Emma with Nelson in numerous commemorative prints and engravings, she was deliberately excluded from his lavish state funeral at St. Paul's Cathedral on January 8, 1806. Despite her financial ruin, Emma maintained her public persona as Nelson's glorious mistress. Desperate to keep her place in high society, she revived her famous attitudes performances. London supper parties came alive when Lady Hamilton arrived, delighting guests with her dramatic storytelling and performances. While maintaining this glamorous facade, Emma frantically wrote begging letters to government officials, alternating between demanding they honor Nelson's wishes and requesting a pension for her Naples services. Emma's extravagant lifestyle and generosity to Nelson's relatives and her own family eventually led to financial collapse. By 1813, she was imprisoned for debt in the King's Bench Prison in Southwark, living within the rules, a 3-square-mile area around the prison where debtors could avoid arrest. 13-year-old Horatia, once a celebrity child doted upon by admirers, was miserable in the squalid surroundings of Blackfriars, with its slaughterhouses, factories, prostitutes, and beggars. In April 1814, Emma was shocked to discover from the Herald newspaper that Lord Nelson's letters to her had been published without her knowledge. The book shattered Emma's public image as Nelson's adoring mistress. His complaints about the Admiralty, jealousy of the Prince of Wales, and apparent preference for dallying with Emma rather than performing his naval duties outraged readers. Any chance of a government pension was instantly destroyed. With her reputation in tatters and friends abandoning her, Emma's health rapidly declined. Joshua Smith and James Perry devised an escape plan, knowing Emma couldn't be arrested in a foreign country. They sold her remaining valuables and raised additional funds from friends. On July 1, 1814, she and Horatia boarded a small private boat from London Bridge bound for Calais, with only £50 in her purse. Emma's health continued to deteriorate in Calais, with stomach pain, nausea, and headaches. By November, too ill to remain in the country, Emma moved with Horatia and their servants to a cheap flat at 27 Rue Francais in Calais. Exhausted by the move, she took to her bed within a week, seeking relief in spirits and laudanum. Her long-term health problems were likely amoebic dysentery contracted in Naples, not gluttony as commonly believed. On January 15, 1815, at 1 p.m, she breathed her last. After Emma's death, Horatia returned to England and eventually found happiness in marriage to Reverend Philip Ward, becoming mother to 8 children. Though never wealthy, Horatia maintained Emma's natural style and grace. A photograph in old age shows her in a rich, dark silk crinoline dress, perhaps in purple, one of Emma's favorite colors. Thanks to her mother's efforts, Horatia became the lovely, graceful, and accomplished woman Emma had worked so hard to create. Emma's obituaries were generally salacious, dwelling on her humble origins and vicissitudes in early life. The Morning Post criticized her for being intoxicated with flattery and admiration, but admitted she was a humane and generous woman, obliging to all whom she had any opportunity of serving by her influence. Emma has been castigated as fat, drunk, extravagant, and promiscuous, yet her figure, drinking, gambling, and spending were nothing unusual compared to her contemporaries. Most of her debts came from trying to make herself the glamorous hostess Nelson craved. She was a good wife to Sir William and faithful to Nelson, whose pursuit of glory was partly motivated by his desire to win money and fame for his wife in the face of heaven and their daughter. Emma's life was intense, dazzling, and brief. She fought for celebrity by constantly reinventing herself when society offered women of her class little besides exploitation. Despite her charisma, intelligence, and charm, she had no rights and relied on what she could win from men. Glamorous, open-minded, and optimistic, but also undisciplined and overreaching, she epitomized the High Georgian Age while exposing its limitations as she struggled for independence. A woman who both embodied and transcended her time, she was truly England's mistress. Emma Hamilton's extraordinary journey from poverty to international fame reveals a woman of remarkable adaptability and determination. Each phase of her life required a complete reinvention, from servant girl to model, from courtesan to diplomat's wife, from fashion icon to political agent, and finally, from hero's mistress to keeper of Nelson's flame. This capacity for transformation wasn't merely opportunistic, it was her primary survival strategy in a world that offered women few legitimate paths to security and independence. What distinguished Emma from countless other beautiful women of her era was her exceptional emotional intelligence. She instinctively understood what each of her protectors needed beyond physical attraction. For Romney, she became the living embodiment of classical ideals. For Sir William, the perfect hostess and cultural companion. For Queen Maria Carolina, a trusted confidant and political ally. And for Nelson, the adoring audience his ego required after years of marriage to the critical, anxious Fanny. Emma's famous attitudes performances perfectly symbolize her life strategy, using minimal props and maximum expressiveness to transform herself into whatever role circumstances demanded. These performances weren't just entertainment, they were a metaphor for her entire existence. She understood that in Georgian society, a woman without wealth or title could only advance by becoming what powerful men wanted her to be, while somehow maintaining her essential self beneath the performance. Her greatest tragedy was that despite mastering the art of pleasing others, Emma never fully escaped the constraints of her gender and class. Even at the height of her fame and influence, she remained legally and financially dependent on men. When those men died or abandoned her, the society that had celebrated her beauty and charm quickly withdrew its support. The same aristocratic circles that had applauded her performances refused to honor Nelson's wishes for her care after his death. Emma's life illuminates the paradoxes of Georgian England, a society that simultaneously celebrated female beauty and accomplishment while denying women basic rights and security. Her spectacular rise and devastating fall demonstrate both the possibilities and limitations available to women who dared to step outside conventional boundaries. In many ways, Emma Hamilton was the first modern celebrity, famous primarily for being famous, her image reproduced and consumed by the public, her private life fodder for gossip columns, and her style widely imitated. Perhaps Emma's most enduring legacy is how thoroughly she documented her own existence through portraits, letters, and performances. In an era when poor women typically disappeared from historical record, Emma ensured her story would survive. The thousands of images she inspired and the passionate letters she preserved give us unprecedented insight into both her remarkable life and the society that both elevated and ultimately abandoned her. Through these artifacts, England's mistress continues to captivate us over two centuries after her death, still performing her most successful attitude as an icon of beauty, passion, and indomitable spirit.